Some of us think that there are two types of people in the world, the analytic mind or those that are driven by their gut. Is there more? We're going to find out on this edition of Frank Relationships.
You're listening to Frank Relationships with Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Yes. As always, those are my babies. Thanks for getting Daddy started today. Mwah. Author Ellen Tad is with us today, and I'm curious, what in the world does it mean, Ellen, when you say our task here on earth and in the body is to learn to sustain the qualities of spiritual oneness right in the middle of the human condition, teeming with dichotomy? That's a mouthful.
Thank you for that wonderful question.
Thank you.
Well, I need to put it in a little context. So I have had many years of clairvoyant experiences where I've been taught by magnificent beings in the spiritual world, and they have taught me that everyone is a spirit, a soul, and a personality, mm-hmm. and that our spirit is the part of our nature that is constant. It's our enlightened self. The spirit is always loving and always compassionate and always wise. And within each of us, we have this core essence. And the soul is the container of the spirit that allows the spirit to have individuality and animation. And the soul contains all of our past life patterns, traumas, talents, and fears. And then the personality is over the soul, and just as in psychology, I'm taught that it's influenced by genetics and environment, but also our past life influences and our spiritual essence. So, in other words, the sentence you meant is that we're here to learn how to feel, express, and manifest our spiritual nature, which contains these universal spiritual qualities mm-hmm. in the midst of the human condition, which has good, bad, right, wrong. At the spiritual level, there's a consistency of feeling and experiencing love even in the midst of difficulty, or to have compassion even in the midst of great challenges. Mm-hmm. So learning to actualize and feel spiritual principles in the midst of the complexity of our life is what that means.
Nancy, I kind of hear a tone of acceptance in what she's saying. You know, that's
your,
my special
it's
word.
His yes. Hot button, yeah. Acceptance.
So we'll,
yes,
we're gonna...
acceptance is one of the great spiritual principles. Mm. I have experienced and been taught that first and foremost, we must accept what is. Mm-hmm. And then given what are we going to do? Mm-hmm. And it's through having acceptance first that we get peace. And it's through that peace we can then find clarity.
Mm-hmm. You told a story in your newly released book, The Infinite View. And as a matter of fact, it was just released yesterday. So congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
You told a story where you went from being very protective of a child or children in general to being less protective of children, but one child in particular. Would you share that with us?
Yes, it's kind of a long story. I'll see if I can make it brief.
No need. We got time.
I had an experience where I was meditating with friends. This was many years ago. And in the midst of my meditation, I had a vision off to the right. And I saw a Native American man in etheric form coming toward me, and my own consciousness was moved to the left, and for the very first time, I became a trance medium, and this Native American spirit spoke through me to my friends, and they said that he talked about the power of nature and the beauty of nature. And then when he left and I came back into my body, I experienced his consciousness. It's like he left a residue of his consciousness, and I saw the world around me with new eyes, and I felt just joy in simple existence. And at that moment, my neighbor was screaming at her son. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as you said, I've been protective of children. I still feel protective of children. And when I heard this woman screaming at her son, though, from this other state of consciousness, I saw a vision of this boy's past lives, mm-hmm. where he had been a thief and he had been really a character who did not treat people well.
Had
incarnated into a new life where he wasn't being treated very well by his mother. Mm-hmm. And I remember not so much feeling like I wanted to go over and congratulate the mother for screaming at her son, but I did feel this sense of order and cosmic justice that circumstances that transpire have reasons. And then the next day, this boy came over to our house and he tried to steal something. He was about, I think, about 8 years old. And so I reprimanded him with the recognition that this was an old lesson for him to learn to respect other people, to respect people's things and privacy, and that I saw that we're all in an incarnation process learning lessons, and the circumstances that we find ourselves in are directly linked to the lessons we're here to learn.
So let me get this right. An 8-year-old tried to steal something from you, and you stopped him, and you said, you know, in your past life, you were a thief and a shady character.
No, I didn't.
Okay.
And you're on that track again.
Explain to him what it means to respect other people's things.
Uh-huh.
And when I was explaining it to him, I had this feeling that I wasn't just explaining it to an 8-year-old child.
Right.
I was explaining it to a soul,
right.
who was working on this lesson.
So, Ellen, I'm just playing with this for a moment. Because he was 8, do you think he may have actually been able to hear the truth? That this, like, even as a game, or, you know, because kids are like, I almost want to think, if somebody told me when I was 8 years old, you know what, you've been here several times, you played that game before, and you need to check yourself. And I'd be like, oh, Aunt Sally told me I lived before, and then I was a thief. And oh my, you know what I mean?
She I would said have been she didn't fascinated. Say that.
I know, but what I'm, what I'm preparing to ask her is,
can children hear it?
Yeah. Do you think he actually could have heard that?
Well, you know, before I had a spiritual awakening, I thought I was going to be a child psychologist.
Okay.
Because I'm very interested in human development.
Okay.
And now I'm interested in human and spiritual development. So, you know, in my book, I write about the fact that I met my children before they were born, and the experience of watching my son incarnate was one of the most powerful experiences of my life, where I saw him in etheric form, and then his etheric body dissolved, and then a beam of white light entered into the new child, and then in a couple of hours he was born. And so it was perfectly clear to me, because I saw it and I experienced it, that he was not mine, that I was providing a body, I was going to raise him in this life, but that he was an individual on his own life path, and he had his own strengths and weaknesses that he was coming in with, and that I could, you know, help or hinder him. And so the process of raising my own children has been a very interesting one in terms of how to communicate these ideas to children. And I find that we all learn through repetition. Absolutely. That when you have one conversation with someone, you know, maybe it penetrates a little bit, but then there's another one and another one. Mm-hmm. So it's through an ongoing conversation about meaning and ideas and learning that children really do learn, but it's the same for us as adults. Mm.
Welcome to Frank Relationships, a show for you, my brethren, who, like me, are too young to be considered old and too old to be considered young. It's also for those of you who love and support us. We're here to provide weekly wisdom, conversation, and the information that'll help create loving and flexible parents and partners. I'm Frank Love, and you can find me, my blog, and my various social media incarnations at franklove.com. If you're listening to the show on Blog Talk Radio, please follow us, and via iTunes, please subscribe so that you can effortlessly get the show each week. Also, if you're enjoying the show, and of course you are, please give us a favorable iTunes rating and please share it with your family and friends on your favorite social media platform. We're always looking for new social media friends, so please help us help our communities by spreading the word about the show. Greetings to my super-duper co-host, Nancy Goldring.
Hi, Frank.
The consummate generalist is with us today.
Indeed.
Ha-ha. Shortly after today's guest completed her freshman year in college, she had a remarkable experience where she was able to contact her deceased mom. Her mother's presence and message healed our guest's childhood trauma of denying her clairvoyant and clairradiant gifts and transformed her view of the world. Very soon after this awakening, she began to have contact with guides and teachers from spiritual realms who provided her with an extraordinary education. Now, she's an educator and author who's been teaching and counseling for more than 40 years. She's widely respected for the integrity of her work, the accuracy of her perceptions and guidance, and the clarity and usefulness of her teaching. And she's here to help us find new ways to access our guides and voices.
Hmm.
So, if you, like me, want to know how she defines true fulfillment, and I got to tell you, Nancy, in reading that, that was magic.
Wow.
So you'll
okay.
understand
okay.
soon.
Okay.
What zooming is and what first errors are. And I'm not talking about ERA, I'm talking about ERRORS, errors, those kind of errors.
Goof ups.
Yes.
People.
Then stay tuned as your Frank Relationship team talks with internationally known clairvoyant counselor, Ellen Tad. Welcome to the show.
Oh, gosh, you just have the most wonderful voice. I love listening to you.
Why, thank you. That feels good, too. Okay,
wow.
We're going to have you on again. Well, before we get in too deep in today's subject matter, and I guess that doesn't fit because we're already in deep.
We're in.
Let's check in and see what's going on in the news. Ellen, please don't be bashful. We certainly want to hear what you have to say about whatever comes. If you have anything, throw it out there also. So, okay. Did you know that a treatment for depression is exercise?
Yes.
You did know that?
Yes, I did. And actually, I knew
yes.
it because I read it, actually.
Okay.
I read that the prescription was actually, the article was really talking to women.
Mm-hmm.
And the point that it was making was that men often, when they're irritated or upset about something, they go to the gym
mm-hmm.
and they hammer it out in the gym.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if a woman doesn't kind of see the gym as a go-to place, then she kind of carries her upset in a different way, and she might call somebody. Mm-hmm. But the point that they were making was that, you know, exercise and, you know, releasing endorphins and changing your mood and all that was super mm-hmm. for that. Okay. So, yeah. And you too, Ellen, huh?
Well, in my book, I talk a little about this, about depression. Mm-hmm. You know, I watch people's energy, and part of the process of watching people's energy has been to watch people's chakras, which are energy centers in the etheric body. And the crown chakra at the top of the head, which is often seen as the golden halo in religious pictures, it's the center of inspiration. It's the center of trust and devotion. And what closes it is discouragement and worry. And in the aura, the discouragement is actually a depression in the aura. So I always say depression is a closed crown chakra.
Hmm.
And when we feel happy, the crown chakra is open. So in some ways, I've replaced the word depression with discouragement.
Okay.
That when someone feels depressed, they're feeling discouraged, and there are different degrees of discouragement. There's a little discouragement, and then there's deep discouragement. So it's very important to understand what opens the crown chakra, because when it's open, that depression or discouragement goes away.
Mm-hmm.
And so changing, moving, you know, doing anything that is expansive really helps to expand the aura and keep it from being depressed. Very early on, when my guide started working with me, they said, you need to exercise every day to keep your aura expanded so you don't overly absorb other people and the environment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So certainly exercise is one thing. But the other is to recognize that we need to fill our lives with inspiration.
Yes.
What inspires us? And it's different, a different answer for different people.
It's funny you saying that, because I was going to jump in with something that's in your book where you say something to the effect of, you can't be inspired and depressed at the same time.
Mm.
Exactly.
So you, they can't live in the same space.
Yes, she suggests that you find some things that inspire you. Make a list of things that inspire you. And when you get into a place when you're depressed, shall we say,
right,
that you look at these things that inspire you, or go to one of the things on that list, because you can't be in both places at the same time.
Hmm. Okay.
I thought that was great. And I personally, I find that that exercising or doing something physical, it really takes you out of your head. It's into your spirit, because
that's right.
You can't, like she says about inspired versus depressed, you can't be stuck in your head while you're physically exerting yourself. It's very tough, because you're more concerned about whatever is going on with your body that you're dealing with right now. You know, if you're jogging, it's hard to be stressed when you're jogging, because you gotta breathe and you gotta pay attention and make sure you
yes.
don't trip on this concrete. Or go on, Ellen, please.
Well, and just you said it. You know, when you're moving, you can't be stuck.
Mm-hmm.
So that feeling of stuckness starts to break up
mm-hmm.
with motion, whether that motion is physical movement or that motion is a change of attitude, or that motion is putting yourself in a new environment, in a new conversation.
Mm-hmm.
It's the process of breaking up the logjam.
Yes.
So that our lives can start to flow again, instead of being caught in a repetitive place. You know, trauma is an inability to let go of an unwanted experience. And when we're ruminating, we're caught in this repetitive place, and we need to move and keep going, because life keeps moving
mm-hmm.
and our lesson is to keep moving with it. It's
mm-hmm.
that analogy of life is like the river. We have to keep flowing instead of getting stuck at any point in the process.
Mm. That's perfect.
Yeah.
Life is moving, and we got to keep moving with it.
Yeah.
That's one. That's going right in the pocket.
Excellent.
Okay. Five tips for feeling more secure in your relationship. This is an article that I read. And the piece on treatment for depression is exercise. I read that in Scientific Mind magazine. Five tips for feeling more secure in your relationship. Number one, don't make assumptions about your partner's motivations or behaviors, because you could be way off the mark.
That's, oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's solid right there. I like that.
Yes.
Make time to talk about any issues as they arise and don't let them fester into a bigger problem. Yep.
Okay. Absolutely. And the way I say it is stay current.
Nice.
Keep the emotional space clean.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Great.
Healthy couples enjoy time together as well as individual activities and alone time. I like it. Remember.
I do too.
Yep. Remember that a little communication and affection can go a long way. And an example that they give, they say Brianna wasn't really asking for that much. She just wanted to know that Raymond cared about her. I'm sorry, I didn't bring the article, so I don't know exactly what they're talking about, but
it stuck out.
Yes, it did.
Okay.
But and
it's
the
not
last,
sticking yeah. now.
Yeah. People want to feel considered and valued, and just as you said, a little bit of quality time can go a long way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And if you find yourself in a pattern of miscommunication over many months, consider seeking couples therapy.
Hmm.
Nice. And that's another way of not letting things accumulate, which was the second one. So, that's great. That's great.
You know what? One of my favorite memories, I guess I can call it a memory, is when my grandparents had a couple friend. They were friends with a couple.
Mm-hmm.
And so the wife was planning a surprise birthday for her husband. So naturally, her actions for a few months were a little cloak and dagger.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it got so intense for him that he started thinking she was having an affair.
Mm-hmm.
And just when he was about to confront her, thank God, the party happened.
Wow.
So that whole idea of not, you know, don't be so sure you know what your partner's motivations are. You could think your partner's messing around and they're messing around in your behalf.
That's a great story.
Yeah.
Now, the thing that stands out to me is, why is that one of your favorite stories?
I just thought it was fascinating at the time how it could have that thing could have melted down into something horrible.
Yeah.
And she was preparing something beautiful for him.
I like it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I get it now.
Yeah. Yes. Get back in the game, Frank.
Okay, Ellen, let's roll. You have noted that even when, and this is another nugget that I really appreciated, even when we are balanced and wise, when we react emotionally to someone who's not, we become trapped in the imbalance of our reaction, no matter how justified we might be. And what I get from that is we may be in a different place than our partner or whoever it is we're interacting with, but if we get in the mud with them and if we react to them in the same spirit that they're reacting to us, then
escalation.
Yes, the situation can easily escalate or deteriorate. Please, I'm putting words in your mouth, Ellen. They're your words. What are you? How do you sum that up?
Well, it's I think a very important concept because it's very common for people to react to other people. I see a lot of what I call ricocheting going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so if people are reacting to each other, then someone needs to change the pattern. You know, I write a story about going into two different stores, one where the environment is loving and supportive, and it's really easy to feel happy and comfortable. And then another store where people are critical and not helpful, and it's easy to get annoyed. And my guides talk about the importance of learning to sustain our balance in the midst of imbalance. Mm-hmm. And this is so important because we live in a world where there's a lot of imbalance. Mm-hmm. And it would be nice if we had a world where everyone was loving and everyone was wise, but that's not what we have right now. So the way that we turn the tide and really create a positive contribution is to learn to not react to imbalance. And this is where I'm a big proponent of using the third eye chakra, mm-hmm, as a point of perception to help us sustain a positivity and a clarity in the midst of confusion. Mm-hmm.
Can you talk to us about how one goes about opening the third eye?
Yes. So about 10 years after my spiritual awakening, I started using my clairvoyance to watch chakras. I became what I call a chakra watcher. Mm. And it was a fascinating study. I started really understanding human behavior more deeply through watching these seven energy centers and how they function in everyday life. I learned a lot. I wrote another book, a book earlier called The Wisdom of the Chakras, that are my conclusions. And I learned, one of the most important things I learned is that perception informs feeling and feeling informs action. And that I found that some people are focused in the gut, the center of emotion, as they're moving through their lives. Other people rely more on their analytical mind. And then there's a third option, which is wisdom, which is this point in the middle of the forehead, the third eye chakra. And, you know, there are a lot of educated people who aren't wise, and there are a lot of wise people who aren't educated. Mm-hmm. Wisdom is a different faculty. Mm-hmm. Wisdom is the ability to see the far-reaching impact. Mm-hmm. And what I found through the chakra watching is what activates wisdom is quite literally focus and concentration. Mm-hmm. And in sports, they call it the zone. Mm-hmm. Okay. The zone is this place of deep focus, and actually the third eye is the center of a spiritual perception. It's another way of thinking of it. It's a oneness perception. Mm-hmm. It's the recognition that there's interconnection in life. And I've worked with this with now large numbers of people, and it's striking how people can go from perceiving from the gut and feel turmoil and confusion, then move their attention to the point in the middle of the forehead and have clarity and wisdom. And I've also done this with children, and they become wise sages when they're focused. Mm-hmm. And this is a technique that I now teach. My friend named it the TAD technique after me. Mm-hmm. Comparison of perception from the gut, the perception in the third eye. And so I'm a big proponent of teaching people how to live life looking through three eyes, an eye in the middle of the forehead and the two physical eyes. And that deep focus really is a remarkable transformative tool.
And one of the tools that you recommend for deep focus is meditation?
Well, I actually make a distinction between two skills. One is deep listening, which is accessible through learning to meditate. Mm-hmm. And the other is deep focus, which is developing focus and concentration and the activation of the third eye.
Okay.
They're
I'll
not
give you
the
a
same.
Funny story.
Okay.
I have a client who was having some challenge in communicating with her husband, and she had been my student and knew the power of the third eye. And so she bought a ping pong table. Mm-hmm. And when she would want to have important conversations with her husband, she would invite him to play ping pong. Because when you play ping pong, you have to be focused on the ball.
Right.
Any focus and concentration activates the third eye. So the quality of their communication, their ability to talk about the hard stuff became much easier while they were playing ping pong. Isn't that a great story?
That is. And it reminds me there was a story, a character in a book that we recently discussed with Edward Fullyoun. We discussed his grandmother used to sit with tea.
Yeah.
If you wanted to talk, the first thing she would say is, "Let's have some tea."
Right.
And the tea became almost a ritual
conversation.
Yes,
yeah.
where it laid a relaxing foundation for two people to communicate. It reminds me of what we discussed during that interview. So I think I get it.
Well, she used tea to soothe the person and to almost distract them. Mm. Where the ping pong
is to focus.
Is focusing you as a way of being able to have a more intense conversation, but keep that part of you that might be overreacting. You're taking that out on the ball, whether you even think you are or not.
You sound like you're listening.
Well, another example was when my daughter was a teenager and she was feeling overwhelmed by school and, you know, her social life. I lit a candle and I said, "Focus on the flame of the candle and ask yourself the important questions about your circumstance." And when she was focused on the candle, again, she was wise, she was succinct, she wasn't emotionally reactive. And so it doesn't matter what we focus on. It can. I often, when I wake up in the morning, I'll focus on the corner of a picture frame. And while I'm focused, I ask myself the question, what are my priorities today? Mm-hmm. So my guides say focus and concentration is equal to power.
Hmm.
Nice. I'm reminded of a story of my own. So a woman came to me and wanted to talk about a scenario that she was dealing with her husband. She believed that he was, quote unquote, cheating. Mm-hmm. And so she believed that in response, she needed to cheat. And my question to her was, well, who are you? And it had to do with, do you really believe in order to get the most out of the situation, in order to resolve it and to heal the situation, that you have to react or respond in kind?
Retaliate.
Yes,
really.
Retaliate. Mm-hmm. And so... In another way of saying that, it touches on the wisdom concept. And I fundamentally believe that wisdom will often take us to a place where there's nothing that we need to do.
Mm.
You literally don't have to do a thing.
Mm.
So almost silence or no action is not. No action
is an action.
Is an action.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
So. Her response was, well, I am reactionary. And my response to that was, well, that means that you are, in essence, someone else. Mm-hmm. You are the reflection of someone else, because you don't, if you believe that you're just a reaction, that means you're powerless. You're just what someone else, you're just a response to what someone else does. You're not actually... You're not actually balanced. You're not in a place that is clear to you. You are not.
She's not able to create her own experience.
Yes, there you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
So and I don't know if that. I don't know if she got it. If it resonated with her, I know it resonated with her, but I don't know if she really absorbed it and
took
it on.
She hadn't measured the cost. Because she'll...
Well, it's a perfect example of a solar plexus reaction.
Mm. Yes.
That when we live in the solar plexus and our situation is not as we want it to be, the tendency is to react either in anger or in sadness or in hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And this reaction causes another reaction. And this is what I mean by ricocheting. Everybody's imbalances keep ricocheting off each other. And it's not until we step off of that reaction do we learn how to actualize our own spiritual nature? Mm-hmm. And that's linked to that very first quote you started with at the beginning of the interview, which is the non-reactive state is a oneness perspective. It's a perspective in staying connected to the attunement of our spirit rather than being caught in the human condition and reacting when things are not ideal.
In fact, speaking of spiritual nature, I mentioned this early in the interview also, that I alluded to it, that the definition of true fulfillment, mm-hmm. and I found this to be so beautiful. Mm-hmm. She says, true fulfillment is when we manifest our spiritual nature. And I also hear that as true peace or true happiness. That's an example of me putting words in her mouth. Okay. She says specifically true fulfillment, but I love that concept. When we manifest our spiritual nature, when you or I are just simply being who we are put here to be, when we're doing what we are called to do, that's my interpretation of it all. Please, but Ellen, your words,
yes,
what do you say?
That's exactly right. And I think why it's so important to emphasize this is culturally we tend to be taught that fulfillment is getting what we want. Mm-hmm. And that may mean a relationship or a certain level of income or whatever it is that we want. And then if we don't get what we want, we feel like victims, hurt or sad or mad. Mm-hmm. But if we transform the definition to my guide's definition, which is that fulfillment is not so much getting what we want, it's the actualization of our spiritual nature, then we're no longer victims. And it's really how we're being and how we're manifesting our own selves that is most important.
But aren't some people manifesting or uncovering the core of themselves by going for the things they think they want?
Yes, it's not to say that desire is bad. Desire propels us into creativity.
Right.
Desire moves us along in our life. But it's really important to differentiate between desires that come from the attunement to our spirit versus desires that come from fear or cultural confusion.
Hmm. So how does a person get, as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking, okay, there are people for whom they are what they desire. Am I making any sense? It's like there isn't, you know, it's like telling a person to kind of step back from their thinking. Most people think they are what they're thinking.
That reminds me of someone who's after a degree. A degree from, you know, a university or something like that. And they fully associate who they are
with
their degree. I mean, that's who I am.
Right.
And I think that's what she's talking about.
Yeah. I guess I'm kind of, as I'm listening to and through what you're saying, Ellen, I'm hearing that oftentimes we don't really make the distinction between ourselves and our spiritual selves or our worldly selves and our spiritual nature until we hit some kind of wall. Mm-hmm. And
that comes from pursuing
the stuff we think we want,
mm-hmm. Please,
which
Ellen.
Makes it part of the spiritual journey. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, please.
Well, you know, the way my guides talk about it, which I love, is that that our identity and our behavior are separate.
Okay.
So we know this as children. When you have a two-year-old and they keep dumping their juice or milk or whatever, we don't think, you know, stupid child, they're dumping their drink. We think, oh, a two-year-old in a stage of development, you know, they're learning about gravity.
Right.
But when people become adults, there's a tendency to start boxing people by their behavior. You know, this is a generous person or a selfish person or a lazy person or a hardworking person. But my guides say that identity and behavior are separate, no matter what age we are, because our behavior is our stage of development as we are learning. And our identity is deeper. Our identity is this spiritual essence, our enlightened self, and we're learning how to manifest this self in the material world at this time. So we're going through learning experiences. Life on Earth is a school. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, we're learning to integrate our spiritual nature with our behavior. This is where I have a chapter in the book on attunement. And attunement is this aligning of our conscious mind with our spirit. And that is a wonderful way to then clarify what our appropriate direction is, our appropriate desires. You know, how often do you meet someone who goes in a direction because it's what their parents wanted them to do, and then they find themselves in a place in their life which isn't a match for who they are? And so the process of learning to listen very deeply and to focus very deeply to this inner spiritual connection so that we can be guided from this core place.
Alan, you have you've taken Jeff out of the off of the boards, and he
here he comes.
You have awakened the sleeping giant.
You have not heard my voice to this point, Alan. And you are much smarter than me. However, the only challenge I'll have on what you just said is that behavior does define who we are. And the ramifications and result of behavior, whether learned or not,
right,
define who we are.
Or how we're perceived.
Repercussions.
Yeah.
Exactly. And yeah, how we're perceived and how we move forward, whether repairing bad behavior or learning from and continuing to exhibit good behavior. Behavior, mistakes, is who we are.
It's not to say that behavior isn't important. I'm not saying that behavior isn't important. It is important, and we have responsibility for it. I mean, I believe in karma, cause and effect. We always have responsibility for our actions. However, at any time, people can change.
Right.
At any time, people can learn. And if we lock people into their behavior, we can make it harder for them to change, or for ourselves, for that matter, because we are more than our behavior.
Mm.
Let me see if I can give you an example.
I've got one.
Donald Trump.
It's not an attack, Ellen, okay. I promise.
I've got one, Ellen.
I wondered when he was going to come into the conversation. So where should we go with this? What direction?
Well, she
do you
said
want
she
go
had
with
an
Donald
example.
Trump?
You're gonna
well, we don't have to go with Trump. You know, you could
I just mentioned that because behavior is a reflection of who you are, and yes, you can change. It's
yeah.
still a part of your being.
Mm. Part of the expression.
You see, this idea of spirit, soul, and personality.
Okay.
So everyone, no matter who they are, still has this enlightened core.
Mm-hmm.
Now, think about the sun. The sun is so strong that it shines in my house and your house. It doesn't discriminate.
Okay.
It's full of light and warmth. But some days the clouds are so thick that it looks like the sun doesn't even exist, but it's still there.
Mm-hmm.
So think of the spirit in each person as the sun. So here is this powerful source. And the fear, the ignorance, the confusion is like clouds that cover over the spirit. And sometimes it looks like the spirit isn't even there. So in certain people who are driven by fear, who are driven by ignorance, there's so many dark clouds of misconception hiding their spirit that it looks like their spirit doesn't even exist.
Mm.
But it's always still there. So the process of evolution doesn't exempt anyone from growth.
Mm.
And yet we still must stand up and speak out against behaviors that are destructive and that are not in harmony with spiritual principle.
And what I believe to be an effort to be consistent with what she's saying, if you think about past life, and if you really look at Trump looks to me like he's like a brat That's how he appears to me.
Okay.
A brat and a bully.
Yes, a brat and a bully. Now, if you think about it from a bigger perspective, from maybe look at his past life. In his past life, he may have been in poverty. Or in his past life, he may have been someone who was completely ignored or downtrodden or some variance of things that would have him react in his current life as a rich kid brat.
Mm-hmm.
And that is how he is to many showing up right now. But what is the deeper, what's behind all of that?
Well, I think the
my big concern is why have so many people been behind Trump, and why is it that people don't see him clearly? So this is where I'm a really big proponent of helping people understand that living life focused in the gut is a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Because what I see with the people who mostly, I mean, not everyone, I haven't observed everyone, but many of the people I see that voted for Trump live their life in their gut.
Mm-hmm.
And when you live your life in your gut, there becomes a self-centeredness. What's he going to do for me?
Mm-hmm.
It's all about that person. A broader view is not just what will this person do for me, but what will he do for the world? What will he do for all people? What
yes.
will he do that will have far-reaching ramifications? So the perception, my guides say perception informs feeling and feeling informs action. And where we focus informs our perception. So I think a big problem is that Donald Trump lives in his gut, his supporters live in their gut, and it creates a selfishness because it's a human perspective without a broader view.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that for me, really wanting to help people understand the power of focus for clarity, for reading people accurately, and for making decisions that are for the common good.
I look at Trump supporters, but when I think about Trump supporters, I see individuals who fundamentally believe that this country was founded for the best way to put it is this country was founded to benefit white males.
Group. Okay.
White males.
Okay.
And then, almost intrinsically white families. And when there's a piece in a lot of individuals, I guess there's a significant percentage of white families that feel as though the country is getting away from that foundation. Like this is, and I think Trump almost overtly, but kind of covertly, says, I believe in the principles that this country was founded on, which was the advancement of the white family.
And he's going to bring, kind of get that horse back on track, so
yeah,
to speak.
Yeah, I think that is a conversation that is quietly being had, but I mean loudly being had in some places, but quietly being had by Trump too with the supporters.
Well, I think a couple of things.
Okay.
So one of the things that I feel, one of the ideas I entertain myself with is this notion of mirroring,
mm-hmm.
and things being a reflection of consciousness, awareness, whatever. So I feel that on some level, Trump is a reflection of dominant cultural consciousness, yes. So if he's a brat and he's a bully, then what we have to own as a culture is that aspect of ourselves where we've been brats and bullies. And I think it's no accident that bullying in school is at an all-time high in terms of people's awareness of it and campaigns to mitigate it on all levels. And so I think that's one thing. And this whole notion of the American ideal or dream getting away from the people that it was originally designed to benefit is, it may be accurate, I guess. There may be some accuracy to that, but this notion that it's racial is way off base. Mm. It's almost like to say it's personal. Mm-hmm. So if it's personal, you're way off base, because whatever the campaign is to keep the powers that be in place is no longer, that's no longer the line of demarcation. Mm-hmm. This campaign is universal. Mm-hmm. And essentially I feel that the forces that control what people think is or isn't in their intelligent best interest at a governmental level, to think that it's a racial conversation is a complete misdirection of awareness.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Jeff, I want to hear from you, and I want to hear from Ellen on this. This is interesting to me.
Well, I think that something that was said is really interesting, which is, I think culturally we have this attitude that the most aggressive person wins. Mm-hmm. And that's part of this bullying. Mm-hmm. The most pushing, the loudest, that we have this idea that someone who's aggressive and loud is confident and competent.
Yes.
Which is very far from the truth. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was in Europe recently, and it was amazing to be in a crowded restaurant and have it be quiet, not noisy. And I was in a restaurant in New York yesterday, and everyone's yelling at each other. It's so loud. It's unbelievable. And I was looking at people's chakras and this feeling of, you know, aggressive, loud, win, you know, success. And so we don't have a culture that really honors balance. Mm-hmm. My guides talk about the ability to act and the ability to wait, the ability to speak and the ability to listen. Mm-hmm. You know, we value speaking above listening.
Yes.
We value acting above waiting. You know, and Frank, as you said, non-action can be the wisest action. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we have so many cultural confusions. And I always believe that our fundamental philosophy is the foundation of everything we build. Mm-hmm. And those philosophy is built on our attitudes. And so I think it's true that Trump is a manifestation of a lot of faulty attitudes that don't serve us. And there's complexity to what those are. And I think, you know, this is where I want to speak out about the value of balance, the value of focus, the importance of the quality of our own inner life, and how that has an impact on the quality of our outer life.
Mm. Well said. What you got, Jeff?
Well, for someone like Ellen, I think Donald Trump will provide a case study for many years to come. Donald Trump didn't change who he is to become president.
Yes.
He's been this way for a long time.
Right. Absolutely. And you have a different relationship than, I don't know where you're from, Ellen, but from me and Nancy, because you grew up in his
neck of the woods.
Yes.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Sure,
yeah.
Sure. And aside from that, and aside from being a white male who perceptually has reaped the benefits of white privilege, and I know that, it has been, for an American, such a disappointment and embarrassment that he is now the leader of and representative of who we are. How did this happen? How could it happen? It was the perfect storm. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. The people voted for the lesser of what they thought were two evils. They voted against organized government, blah, blah, blah. What's happening now? And again, I don't think he's going to last the 4 years.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
But I didn't think he was going to win either.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I do think, you know, from everything that Ellen has said so far, that those personality traits, behaviors, chakras are coming to fruition now, and it is not a good movie. Mm. It's just not.
Got it. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Well, I think just like, you know, an example of a smoker who doesn't stop smoking until they get a diagnosis and then they stop, you know, sometimes things have to get very difficult before change occurs. And I do feel that there are many people who have become more outspoken and feel more courageous to be outspoken because there's a sense of importance. The ramifications of not being outspoken are getting more and more clear. So, you know, I think, you know, as they say, the lotus grows out of the mud, you know. So there's, you know, it is a sad commentary, and yet I'm always looking for opportunity and difficulty and to be motivated to create growth and change. And my guide said to me many, many years ago, they said, your world circumstance will worsen. People will fall to the side of fear, or they will fall to the side of a spiritual perspective, and no one will be able to ride the fence.
Wow. Well, we'll stay tuned.
Indeed. Yeah.
And something I feel obligated to say at some level, is, Ellen, even if you were a Trump supporter, and even if the Trump supporters listening, you're welcome. I mean, you're welcome.
I'm not a Trump supporter.
I get that based on what you've already said. But you know, I feel as though it's not fair, if as the host, it's not fair to talk about Trump and not leave room
for his supporter.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that really has nothing directly to do with you, Ellen, but it's speaking to a greater audience
in general. Yeah.
Well, I think it's really endlessly interesting to understand why people do what they do, why people choose what they choose, and to listen. You know, when I meet someone who voted for Trump, I really want to know why.
Yes.
I'm so curious. What are your thoughts? What are your ideas? And so it's important to both have conviction and openness.
Yes.
Otherwise, we become closed-minded.
Absolutely. You've noted that when you have a gift, and the gift that you have, that you found it important to ask people for permission to give it to them, if it was related to something that you see in them or a message that you've been given, why is it important to ask for permission?
Well, I guess I don't quite know what you mean. I believe, again, in this multifaceted sense of identity, mm-hmm. that I have been taught to listen to the spirit in people. So sometimes the conscious self is saying one thing, but the spirit in a person is saying another. Mm-hmm. So think about a young child who's saying, you know, I don't want to go to bed, I don't want to go to bed. But you know that the loving thing to do is to put them to bed. Mm-hmm. And so this idea of listening deeper than the surface is what I've been taught to do. So sometimes a person may say, you know, I'm not interested in what you have to say, but their spirit is talking to me, mm-hmm. and saying, well, plant some seeds here anyway. So I actually think that where I listen for permission is deeper than the verbal level.
The story that actually came to mind that inspired that question was, and the book you mentioned, you saw something in someone and you mentioned it to them, and their response to you was, who do you think you are?
How
dare you?
Yeah, how dare you think that you know me in some ways. And so I just wanted to really touch on that. Does that strike you?
Yes. Yeah, so that was a story that occurred when I was 19, and it was right after my mother came back to me after she died, and I was really in the what I call the oh wow stage. Mm-hmm. I was in the oh wow that life is so much bigger than I had ever imagined. And so I was not discriminating. I was just enthusiastic about wanting to share what I had experienced and what was happening to me. So I think for me, the real lesson in that man's reaction to what I was sharing with him wasn't so much that I needed to ask permission as much as it was that I needed to discern who and when to communicate with, and that this man was not opened mm-hmm. to the kinds of things I was talking about. And if I had been more focused, more listening, and not so green or immature in the process, I would have been able to tell that.
Thank you. Mm. Okay. All right. Mm. You got a good book for me other than your three books, which I'm going to mention in just a moment. Got a good book you recommend and even a good movie.
Are you asking now?
Yep. Is there a good book that you recommend to our audience?
Well, gee, that's such an interesting question. You know, I don't tend to read on spiritual topics because I'm very focused on having my own experiences. Mm-hmm. And so when I like to read, I like to read about other things, whether it's a novel or it's information. I particularly am passionate right now about the work of Dr. Thomas Rau, who has a clinic in Switzerland called the Paracelsus Clinic. Mm-hmm. And he wrote a book about the Swiss secret to health. And I think his clinic is extraordinary and a wonderful model for a new approach to medicine.
Nice. And what about a good movie?
Gosh, the last movies I've seen have not impressed me. There's nothing current that jumps to my mind.
Okay.
You know, I do love the classic Groundhog Day because it is a movie that essentially is talking about reincarnation, mm-hmm. but it's doing it in a way that I think is more accessible, mm-hmm. but it's really the story of reincarnation, which is we repeat and repeat and repeat our same patterns until we learn.
Nice. Hmm. You're listening to Frank Relationships, and we're talking with Ellen Tad, the author of the newly released The Infinite View. She's also the author of The Wisdom of the Chakras and Death and Letting Go, which appeared on the Boston Globe bestseller list. Ellen, please tell us what you're up to and how we can find you.
Well, I have a website, and it's simply ellentadd.com. And right now, since yesterday was my publication day, I'm in New York. I just did a book launch party yesterday, and I'm going to be doing a lot of interviews and traveling and talking about my book. And I'd love to hear from people who read it. I'd love to hear if my book is doing the job that I hope it will do.
Very nice. Much success.
Yeah.
Much success.
Thank you.
Along
it's
today's
a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you.
Along today's journey, we've discussed ricocheting, Donald Trump, and the third eye, and how to get closer to it. Thank you to my co-host, Nancy. Thanks to Jeff Newman, my engineer. And thank you to my guest, Ellen Tad. You've been great. I hope you've
thank
had
you.
As much fun as I've had hanging out with today's ensemble. As always, it's my wish for you to walk away from this conversation with a heaping helping of useful information that'll help create a relationship that's as loving and accepting as possible. Let us know what you thought of today's show at Facebook.com/RelationshipFLove, on Twitter at Mr. That's M.R. Frank Love, or at franklove.com. If you're listening via Blog Talk Radio, make sure you like us there, and if via iTunes, make sure you subscribe so that you can receive each week's show. This is Frank Love.